I came to tennis in an unremarkable manner. My mother, who first played the game in the post-war Surrey of her childhood, simply packed me into our Ford Country Squire station wagon at age 7 with a small gripped Jack Cramer autograph and drove me down to the Veteran Avenue courts for a lesson with Wynn Brenneker, the resident pro. There had been no discussion among my parents and me beforehand about learning the sport, and probably very little afterward. How was it? They each must have asked me. Did you have fun? Whether I nodded or just shrugged my shoulders, I can't be certain all these years later. My mother penciled in another lesson for the following week on the oversized calendar of family activities she maintained on the fridge, and that was that. Looking back, what seems extraordinary is the extent to which my life has been affected by my taking up tennis. I am tempted to add, for better or worse, but that's only because of my recent catastrophic downfall. I don't wish to sound melodramatic, but there's really no other description that does it justice. Before that, any casual observer would have viewed the role of tennis in my life as positive. I mean, people don't usually consider regular participation in a recreational sport to be some kind of a scourge. Tennis is supposed to be a game you can play for life, not one that will ruin your life. But I now realize a plausible argument can be made along those lines. Sadly, I myself seem incapable of reaching that judgment. Like Heisenberg's uncertain atom, I am much too close to my own momentum to separate coincidence from causation. If that sounds like a cop-out, so be it. To be clear, I make no bones about taking responsibility for my predicament. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. I've never understood the impulse to blame fate or others for one situation. I'm just not quite ready to name tennis as a co-conspirator. Wynn, short for Irwin, although no one called him by his given name, was at least 6'2" in his canvas Jack Purcells, and had huge, deeply tanned forearms covered in blonde hair. The way he brandished his own Cramer autograph, and the sun caught his Marvel Comics jaw and aquamarine eyes, he looked like he belonged on the beaches of Hermosa, or Redondo, or Malibu, with one of the massive Hobie Alter surfboards of the era. I was so in awe of Wynn that it took me several years to realize I had actual talent. I have always been agile, with excellent hand-eye coordination, and consequently I could relax and feel at home on the court with the other boys who progressed to Wynn's intermediate and advanced groups. By this time, I lobbied my parents for, and eventually received, a Dunlop Max Ply Fort. Still wooden, of course, but more stylish than the hard-edged Wilson rackets. Rocket Rod Laver played with the Dunlop and was the reigning world number one, having achieved the incredible feat of 2 Grand Slams, once as an amateur and once as a professional. I actually served as ball boy in a match Laver played against his fellow Aussie and longtime rival, Ken Rosewall, at the Pacific Southwest Championships held on the hard courts of the LA Tennis Club in Hollywood. It remains one of the thrills of my life, and though I wish I could say I have been judicious about trotting this anecdote out in conversation after a friendly hit or at a party when the subject of tennis comes up, the truth is I recount it shamelessly, like an aging D-list actress might claim a one-night stand with Warren Beatty. My involvement with tennis is actually a tale of two worlds, the concrete courts of California, where callow confidence is tolerated, even encouraged, and the damp, uneven grass courts of England, rife with effusive apologies. Sorry, so sorry, terribly sorry, for all manner of things, a missed forehand, the weather, a broken drinking fountain, that barely masks the bitterness boiling within.